So let's begin with the pranam first. Om Jnana Timiranhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurunmilitam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Taramayam Tadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurum Vaishnavamsha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhan Vitamsha He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dinabandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Haripye Vancha Kalpa Kurubhyascha Vipasindhubhyai Vacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare So Hare Krishna welcome everyone to the second part of the seminar called In Defense of Lord Rama. Yesterday we talked about the significance of the Ramayana as a whole, its significance for devotees of Krishna, for us and for the world, and about its influence in the world, in different world cultures, but also about its meaning. And specifically we talked about the dominant emotion of the Ramayana, which is this feeling of grief or shoka. And there are three different lessons that we can learn from this dominant emotion, right? Does anyone remember what the first one was?
Do your duty.
Do your duty, right? Even if that involves trouble or suffering, do your duty and do what you are supposed to, you're meant to do given your position in the world. The second? Become detached, right? So take a look at the trouble in the world and say, maybe this is something that I don't want to be attached to because it leads to so much suffering. Number three? Separation from the Lord, yes? So it's Krishna's tasting this mood of separation with his devotees. And they are tasting it in relationship to him. So in all three of these ways, for those who are just people of this world, any person can learn the first lesson. Those who are striving for spiritual advancement can take the second lesson. And those who are advanced, who are devoted to the Lord, already established in their relationship with the Lord, can enjoy the third, which is the Lord's relationship of separation from these devotees. So, with these, the general significance of the Ramayana, hopefully basically understood, let's today tackle the most difficult or controversial, rather, question that people raise in regard to the Ramayana. We often hear that the Ramayana is not relevant for today's world because it teaches social values that are much too outdated for us to use today. And particularly, the evidence for that is presented as Lord Ramachandra's treatment of Mother Sita, in which case two incidents in particular stand out. One is the incident of Agni Pariksha, where Sita Devi is asked to stand trial by fire in public, literally trial by fire, in order to prove her purity after having suffered so much at the hands of Ravana.
And then the second being Lord Ramachandra's banishment of Mother Sita later on in the Ramayana, when he is criticized for accepting or re-accepting a wife who has lived in another man's home for a year. So these two incidents are often pointed to as problematic, and indeed they do appear so, because why ought a husband to treat his wife, and that too an ideal wife, in this manner? So that's the question that we're addressing today. Okay. Now, before we talk about Lord Ram's treatment of Sita Devi, let's talk about, we have to clear up one thing especially, which is Lord Ram's attitude towards Mother Sita. It is often portrayed in telling the story of the Ramayana, like I said yesterday, mostly by persons who have themselves not studied the Ramayana, but only have heard about it, or seen movies about it, or something of that nature. But the attitude of Lord Ramachandra towards Sita Devi is the first thing we have to know. Sometimes it's portrayed as if Lord Ramachandra is this really kind of self-centered, ambitious king who is willing to kick away anyone who comes between him and his goal of being seen as perfect by the kingdom, and his goal of being adored by the citizens as ideal. That's his ambition. He wants to be perfect. He wants a great reputation. And he's willing to sacrifice anything and go to any length in order to achieve that. Right? So he's portrayed as this really heavy, chauvinistic type of person who has very little space for anyone who's not useful to him, particularly his wife. However, if you read the Ramayana, you'll find that Lord Rama's character is completely opposite to what I just described as public opinion. In fact, what you find is that Lord Ramachandra has an attitude towards Sita Devi that is so full of love and so full of softness and dedication that it would be difficult to find, like I was saying yesterday, it would be difficult to find a man today who is as in touch with his emotions and as able to express them, particularly to his wife, as Lord Ramachandra did. We often hear of Mother Sita's dedication to her husband, and this is given as an example of a wife's dedication to her husband, how she's willing to follow him in any circumstance, and she thinks of no one else but him, even when they're separated for so many years. But what people often don't realize is that dedication went both ways. Lord Ramachandra was 100% and exclusively dedicated to Mother Sita. In fact, when Sita Devi finally leaves this world, and last time we talked about three times Mother Sita is separated from Lord Ramachandra, right? One against either one of their wishes, the second one on Lord Rama's wishes, the third on Sita Devi's wishes. After the third instance where Sita Devi is separated, Lord Ramachandra is entering Ayodhya very disheartened and very brokenhearted. Valmiki Muni says that he enters Ayodhya holding Sita within his heart, completely remembering her and focused upon her. In other words, that even after her departure, there was no question of anyone else crossing his mind and of him dismissing Sita from his heart. There was no question of that whatsoever. In fact, Lord Ramachandra is described as a man of one arrow, one word, and one wife. Right? One arrow means he shoots an arrow and he only needs one to hit his target. No second arrow is needed. It always hits its target, it accomplishes its goal. The one word, because once he gives his word to someone, he never, ever takes back that word. He spent 14 years of his life trying to fulfill the words of his father, what to speak of his own. And third, a man of one wife. Despite the fact that Kshatriyas were commonly kings were commonly taking more than one wife during that time. Even his father, Maharaj Dashrath, had three wives. Lord Ramachandra took a vow of never knowing more than one woman, and that woman would be Mother Sita alone. So his dedication was significant, his moral dedication and his steadiness in regard to her, just as she was steady in regard to him. But also you see their emotional connection and the amazing relationship that they have with each other throughout the Ramayana. When Sita Devi is lost for the first time through the hands of Ravana, Valmiki Muni again and again throughout that 1 year, as he's searching for Sita Devi, and even in the battle, he talks about how there are times throughout this incident, whenever something, the Lord would see something beautiful, whenever he would see something that would remind him of Sita Devi, whenever the seasons would change. So he spent the 4 months of the rainy season when you cannot travel, you can't do anything because the rains are pouring so hard. He spent in a cave in Kishkindha, in the land of the Vanaras, of the monkeys, after he had met Sugriva. He refused to live in the city because he was in exile. So he stayed in a cave outside the city of Kishkindha. And there, after the rains finished, then, you know, after the rains comes the season of Sharad, or autumn, where everything is now verdant, it's beautiful, it's blooming, everything's fresh, the heat of the summer has died away. And autumn in India is the time for love. It's the time that all the great romances and love stories written in India happen, is in the time of autumn. Just like springtime is here in this country. Autumn is, okay, it's nice, but spring is sort of that time where hope is rising and everyone's happy and things are blooming. So autumn is like that in India, because the rains have just come and you're not preparing for a hot summer, you've just gotten over the hot summer season. And there he's, Valmiki Muni says that one day he just, he breaks down in memory, remembering Sita Devi, thinking about how if she were here, it would be so wonderful, such a wonderful season. And he's completely beside himself with grief. And this happens on a regular basis throughout the year. It's not a one-off thing. He's remembering her, he's crying buckets of tears, and Lakshman is there to console him and to help him through this particular time. Then we go to the time of, you know, when Hanumanji, comes to deliver the message to Sita Devi in Lanka, right? So he finds her, jumps across the ocean, finds Mother Sita, and delivers Lord Ramachandra's message. And after the whole thing takes place, and he gives the ring, and she's very happy, as Hanumanji is leaving, he asks Sita Devi, he says, just as I gave you this ring to give you faith that I actually am a messenger from Lord Ramachandra. And not only did he give a ring, but he, as importantly, he gave a thorough description of Lord Ramachandra. So thorough, he described his whole body, head to toe, everything. And so perfect was that description of the Lord's physical features that Sita Devi knew that this person is coming from Lord Ramachandra. No one else could describe him so well. So he gave her a lot of confidence that I'm actually not a fraud, which Ravana was expert at presenting frauds to Sita and trying to persuade her. But he convinced. So as he's leaving, Hanumanji asks Sita Devi, he says, now you have to give me something that I can take back to Lord Ramachandra, and he knows that I actually saw you. Because Hanumanji had never seen Mother Sita before when he came to Lanka. There's a really nice story of how he decides that this is Mother Sita, which we'll talk about in the Sunday feast class, his arrival in Lanka and what he does there. Very nice details. But he's never seen. So how can I assure Lord Ramachandra that I didn't go find another woman who I think is Sita, and I'm giving him false good news? And so Sita Devi reassures Hanumanji, gives him evidence. How, do you know? How does she give, what evidence does she give Hanuman to take back? Yes?
Why'd she give her, him her ring?
not her ring, but Churamanipa, her hair ornaments. Yes? So one thing she does is she gives a hair ornament, a piece of jewelry. So just like Lord Ram gave the ring, she gives a piece of jewelry that belongs to her. But then there's another evidence that she sends, which is not physical evidence. What is that? Anyone know? She tells him something very special.
My mind is always full of things in Lord Ram, nobody else.
Yes. She says, my mind is only in Lord Ramachandra. But how...
Only Lord Ram goes.
Yeah. But there's one particular incident she tells. An incident that no one else knows. Yes, Prabhu? Yes, exactly. So there's this story. She says, this is a story that no one knows except me and him. Because Lakshman was not there when this incident happened. He was out collecting wood in the forest or doing something else. And it was just the two of us. And they were seated together in the forest. And Lord Ramachandra, it was a very sweet moment. Lord Ramachandra had his head upon her lap and he was taking a nap. And she was admiring him and how handsome he looked. And just at that time, Indra's son, his name is Jayanta, he showed up on the scene and decided to play some mischief. You know, just like people who do vandalism. What's the point? Nothing, right? You don't see the person, you just vandalize, you don't... Yeah. It's just mischief for the sake of mischief, that's all. So he had that sort of attitude, Jayanta. And he took the form of a crow and showed up on the scene and began pecking at Sita Devi, biting her, everywhere. To the point, even at her breasts, he's biting, he's picking, he's biting. And at one point, blood starts to flow from one of these bites. Sita Devi is tolerating this because she doesn't want to disturb Ramachandra's sleep. But when the blood finally drips on Lord Ram's face, he wakes up all of a sudden and sees that Sita is bleeding and becomes very upset and says, what happened? Who did this to you? And she explains that there was a crow that was attacking me. And Lord Ramachandra is so angry at this, so upset at this. At this point, he does not have his bow or his arrows, nothing. Lakshman is not there. It's just the two of them. What do you need weapons, right? He's just spending time with his wife. That he plucks a blade of grass from the ground and chants mantras into that blade of grass, turning it into the weapon of Brahmastra. Brahmastra to kill a crow. This is overkill. You can see how angry the Lord is, right? Yeah. I mean, a crow the Lord could kill by, I don't know, flinging a rock or something. He was that good of an archer. It wouldn't take much. But he's so angry, that he says, let this Brahmastra hit this crow and not return until it does. And this Brahmastra chases the crow, which is, of course, Jayanta, Indra's son, all through the three worlds. And like in the story of Ambarish and Durvasa, this Jayanta, he visits everyone. He visits his father, Indra, and Indra says, whoa, stay away. I don't want to be killed with you. Good luck, my son. And he goes to all the different devas and all up to the heavens. And finally, as he's circulating around the three worlds, he becomes so exhausted that he finally falls back down onto the ground at the feet of Ram and Sita. And when he falls onto the ground, Mother Sita takes her foot and she pushes the crow onto Lord Ramachandra's feet and says, look, my lord, he's doing Sharanagati. He's surrendering to you. Please forgive him. And you've made a promise, remember, that anyone who seeks refuge in you, you will protect him and not kill him. So in this way, she points out, as the mother of the three worlds, and as someone even more compassionate than Lord Ramachandra is, she's forgetting the harm done to her, the offense made to her, and asking the Lord to forgive, and saying, please forgive this foolish boy. Lord Rama agrees, but he says, look, this is the Brahmastra. It cannot be returned without hitting a target. He asks Jayanta, he says, what are you going to sacrifice to this weapon? And in the end, it's decided that he's going to lose one of his eyes. Right? So the Brahmastra, all it does is it takes out one of his eyes and then returns to Lord Ramachandra, having completed his mission. This is a story she tells Hanuman for two reasons. One reason is that it's a story no one else knows, not even Lakshmana. So there is no possibility that Hanuman has gained this knowledge anywhere else. It's evidence that he's actually seen Sita, like Ravana or anyone else couldn't say the story based on what they have heard in public. But the second reason is to motivate the Lord. She's saying, in effect, look, you released the Brahmastra weapon to kill a crow that bit me. Now look at me. I'm kidnapped in the home of a man-eater who's threatening to consume me in the next couple of months. Please do something about it. Can you not do anything for this? When a crow got you so angry, I hope your anger is burning in the same way to protect me. So it just shows you the intimacy and the dedication of their relationship to each other. And this continues throughout the Ramayana, from the first time he loses Mother Sita to Ravana, to this particular incident, to the Agni Pariksha incident as well. All throughout Agni Pariksha, the Lord, it's very interesting how Valmiki Muni describes it. And you start to realize how much of a caricature of Agni Pariksha we hear about in in popular culture. Right? The idea of Agni Pariksha is such a caricature of the original event, such a mishmashed and misinterpreted version of it. When Sita Devi is, when Ravana is finally killed, Lord Ramachandra tells Hanuman and Vibhishan, he says, I want to see Mother Sita. I want to see Sita immediately. Bring her to me without delay. Ask her to shower and to dress and then come quickly without any delay. And the person he sends to call Sita Devi for the first time is Hanuman. And this is very significant because Hanuman was the one who first delivered the message, right? And saw Sita Devi in her time of greatest distress and gave her comfort. So the Lord wants to send him again so that he can see the fruits of the victory and give the good news too. He did the hard work of delivering the bad news. Not the bad news, but the sad news. She's stuck, Lord Ramachandra is thousands of miles away, and it's difficult. So he sends him, you give the good news. And plus, she's going to trust him, remember, because if anyone else goes, she might think, here again, Ravana is trying to fool me. He's telling me the war is over when it's not, and he wants me to let my guard down, and so I become weak. So he sends Hanuman, and when Hanuman comes to Sita Devi and gives her the good news, she says, she is so overjoyed that she can't speak. She becomes speechless, and Hanuman gets worried. He thinks, did I say something wrong? Are you upset? Are you not happy? And she says, no, my son, you don't understand. I can't say anything. This is the moment I've been meditating on for a full year. I've got no words to express my happiness. In fact, she says that for this good news that you've brought to me, there is nothing in this world that I can give to repay you. I am so grateful for this, that in the three worlds there's nothing I can do for you, Hanuman, that will sufficiently repay you, that will sufficiently express my gratitude for what you have done and for the news you have brought to me. At that point, Vibhishan comes to bring a formal invitation because she's a princess, she's a queen. And so he's inviting her as the new king of Lanka, soon to be king. And Sita Devi is so happy, she says, let's go see Lord Ram. And Vibhishan says, no, I think you should follow his instructions and shower first and get ready nicely, because you know she hasn't taken care of herself for so long. It says that she was like a fire covered by smoke, like a gem covered by dirt. So beautiful, and yet at the same time completely unkempt, because she had no reason. She didn't want to look beautiful for anyone there in Lanka. In fact, when Hanuman comes to deliver this good news, he tells her, he says, now that the news is over, after she expresses her gratitude, he says, you know, before I leave, can I just really beat up these Rakshasis who are around you? They've been tormenting you for the past year, and I'm just dying to get them, to hit them. Because I've seen firsthand, when he came, he saw firsthand how they tormented her and threatened her, threatened to kill her every day of that 1 year. And he says, I'm just itching to give it back to them. Please give me permission. And she says, no. She says, no. She says, even as I was brought here, forced against my will, these women too were acting according to the directions of another person. They had no choice in the matter. So why punish them? They too are forced, they're captive to their king. And now that Ravana is dead, they may not be such bad people. So she's very kind-hearted, Mother Sita, very kind. Anyway, that was an aside. Sita Devi comes. She's brought on a palanquin to see Lord Ramachandra. And Valmiki Muni again says that Lord Ramachandra, as he's calling for Sita, as he's waiting, he's crying. And so joyful inside, crying and smiling and his heart is jumping with joy, waiting to see her, as she's brought in this palanquin in a very respectful manner. But there's only one problem, which is that all the monkeys and the bears, the army that has fought for Lord Ramachandra's victory, is making a huge ruckus. You know why? Because they're fighting, they're pushing each other, shoving to get close to the palanquin to try to get a look at Mother Sita. I mean, they want to see. They've risked their lives. They've all fought this battle. They've built a bridge across the ocean. They've spent months and months and months preparing and fighting this battle. They want to see, well, who is this woman for whom we've been fighting? And they're so excited, and they're clamoring, and they're pushing. And Vibhishan says, you know, like they do in India when crowds come for some famous person, some celebrity. So he's got his men pushing them aside and shoving them. And Lord Ram gets really angry. He says, why are you behaving in a way that is displeasing to me? Did I ask you to mistreat these people like this? These people, you should understand, are like my own family. And please treat them as such. They have a right to see Sita. It is said, he says in scripture, that in times of distress, and in times, a few different situations, says in times of distress, in times of marriage, and so on, in great happiness and so on, it's not a problem if a woman is seen like this, even a respectful woman in public, if she's on stage, so to speak. And he says, I understand that you want to bring her here respectfully, but in this case, she should walk. She should come here. So everyone can see Sita Devi. And she too agrees. And she gets off the palanquin and she walks to the Lord. And that meeting, both hearts are just rushing towards each other, Sita and Ram. Even though they cannot show it. Valmiki Muni says, on the outside, the Lord could not show it because of social decorum. They could not run to each other like in Bollywood film. No, that's not possible. But in their hearts, that's what's happening. The Lord is so joyful, so happy. And Sita Devi comes and stands this close to the Lord. And all of a sudden, his demeanor changes. all of a sudden, from being tears of joy and happiness, he becomes hard, hard like fire. And he tells Mother Sita some of the harshest words we ever hear in our life. He says, I fought this battle to do my duty of protecting you, of rescuing you, of keeping the honor of my family and my forefathers. But now that that mission is accomplished, I have no use for you. You're free to go wherever you like. And these words hit Mother Sita, Valmiki Muni says, like a thunderbolt crashing in her heart. In fact, and this is the point I want to make, it says, Valmiki Muni says, this was the first time and the only time in their entire life, in their entire marriage, that Sita Devi had ever heard harsh words from her husband. The point being, they were harsh words, and we will talk about why the Lord went in this direction in just a moment. But what the point to keep in mind is that they were not typical of the relationship between Ram and Sita. Their relationship was one where no harsh words were ever exchanged between them. I mean, think about marriages in this world. How many marriages can claim that? We all say harsh things that we later regret in times of anger. She had never heard harsh words from her husband in her whole life. And that's what made these words all the more painful. As the Lord is saying this, Valmiki Muni says, on the outside his demeanor is as hard as a thunderbolt. On the inside, his heart is breaking. It's shattering into a thousand pieces. And when the whole incident finally wraps up, the Lord instantly gets a wave of such great relief and returns immediately to his old self. Something similar plays out again when the Lord is banished into, when Sita is banished into the forest. And Valmiki Muni describes just how sad the Lord is for what has happened. So the overall point that I want to start off with is to say, first of all, we need a balanced, a proper picture of the character of Sri Ramachandra. Means we should not make him a two-dimensional figure, a caricature of a person where he is portrayed as some selfish, chauvinistic, ultra-ambitious man who is willing to go through any lengths to achieve his ambitions, including getting rid of his wife, who is nothing more than a possession to him. There is just no evidence for that in the Ramayana whatsoever. That's the first thing. The question, of course, then, given that background, is why? Then why did he do it? Sure, we know the basic reasons, right? Both Agni Pariksha and the banishment were done for the same reason. What would the public say? That here's a woman who spent a year in another man's home, and after the possibility of such adultery, Ram, as king, as ideal king, has taken her back. What could be a worse example for the public? So that's the reason we know. Right? That's what we hear. That's what we read. But in order to answer this question more deeply, we have to take a step back and ask a much broader question. Lord Ramachandra, you see, he's the emblem of Dharma, as we talked about yesterday. And part of his lila is to show ideal human behavior, how we behave in proper dharma. But the question we should ask first, in order to answer these two particularly problematic cases, is what is dharma? Now, that question can be answered in many ways. But if we just stick to the word itself, dharma, and I ask you to define what that word is, what is dharma? How would you define that word in just a few words, in just a sentence? Right? I'm not looking for a long paragraph here. Just a few words. What is dharma? Yes. Our essential nature, good. The word dharma in Sanskrit means nature, the qualities of an object or a person. Okay, so dharma is that, it is the law set down by the Lord, given by the Lord. It's the system of religion that we're asked to practice, given by the Lord. Bhagavat Pranita. What else? How else would you define dharma?
Intrinsic quality.
Our intrinsic qualities, good. Intrinsic quality, nature. What else?
What we are built of.
What we are made of, yes. What we are built of. Right? The very substance of who we are. In a basic sense, the word dharma comes from the root dhar in Sanskrit. The same word as dharana, which means to hold or to support. Dharma is what supports us, what holds the word world. It is the order of the world. You see, the world around us has an order to it. The sun rises and sets every day at an appointed time. In fact, we can predict sunrises. I have one, thank you. We can predict sunrises thousands of years into the future, or at least 100 years into the future, no problem. We know exactly when the sun will rise. The seasons move by some regularity. Right? The animals, they travel and they migrate and they mate according to a particular order. The flowers bloom, the fruits come. Everything happens according to a particular order in this world. Hurricane season is a particular season. Hurricanes don't come outside of season. Maybe pushing it a little bit before, a little bit after. Right? So things in this world generally operate by an order. And that order is called dharma. And it's that order which supports or sustains this world, that holds it up, that keeps the world running or turning. Now, human beings, too, have a place in that order. But the problem arises in that although everything and everyone in this world participates in that order, and today they would call it ecological balance or the cycle of life, even though everyone participates in that sensitive balance of the world in a perfect way, human beings are that one species that have the ability to act against dharma, to do something other than what would the whole system has them set to do, that's given them space to do. We have a choice, the ability to go this way or that way. And this is why the question of dharma arises typically for human beings. What is our dharma? We don't typically ask about dharma for dogs or for cows or anyone like that because it's not an interesting question. You could ask that question, but it's not an interesting one. A cow will always practice its dharma in every circumstance, right? But we may not. Now, if we ask for human beings, what is dharma? What is dharma? That question is one of the most difficult questions that we can ask. In fact, all of the Mahabharata and all of the Ramayana is busy, it's set on trying to answer this one question. What is my dharma? You can ask it at a very basic level. What is my dharma now? That means, what am I supposed to do in this circumstance? You're being torn in two different directions. Your mother wants you to do one thing and your husband wants you to do another thing. Which way do you go? Who do you satisfy? Who do you try to make happy? And you might want to do a third thing. So you're torn, right? What is my dharma? What is my duty in this moment? And the Mahabharata is full of stories of very good people in very difficult circumstances making decisions that are generally good but not perfect. Right? It means Maharaj Yudhishthira is the emblem of dharma, but at the same time, it's not easy. And sometimes the decision he makes, there is no good decision. A choice of many different bad decisions. What is my dharma on a basic level? What is my dharma, we can ask, at a higher level meaning what is my duties in terms of my nature for my life. It's the type of dharma question that people ask when they're choosing a career or a major in college. What is my dharma? What am I supposed to be doing in my life? What do I want to achieve? Where do I want to go? Who do I want to be? Based on my psychological and my physical nature. There are some types of dharma that are impossible for us to do, and other types of dharma that we can do. Everyone has different natures, psychologically and physically. There's yet a higher level of dharma that we might ask, which is, what is my ultimate dharma? What is my dharma in the sense of, what is my path in life? What am I meant to be doing? What am I meant to be achieving? And that's then directs us towards dharma in the sense of spiritual life, our ultimate dharma. So, dharma is a question, what is my dharma is a question that is a very deep question. In fact, it is probably the central question for human beings, according to the Vedas. What is my dharma? But here's the important thing to note, that when we're talking about dharma in the material realm, that is, in this world, relating to how we live and how we behave with each other and with our jobs and families, and so on, then the answer to the question, what is my dharma, is always context-sensitive. It's always context-sensitive. What does that mean? You can never give an absolute answer to that question. So, if I were to ask you, is my dharma to be a professor, or is my dharma to be an engineer? Now, you already know what I'm doing as a job. But if someone who you didn't know were to ask you that question, could you answer that question for them? Just if they just asked you, what am I supposed to be doing? We like to give people advice, right? But before you give them advice, what do you need to do first? Ask them about their situation, right? Okay. So you've got these two options. You want to be professor, engineer. What do you like to do? What kind of education do you have? What are your family circumstances like? How quickly do you need to make a living? How much money do you want to make? What are your ambitions? You have to get the context straight. Otherwise, you can't ask that question. Even if I ask you a simple question, is it a good thing to lie? If I asked you, is it a good thing to lie? What would you say? Most people are saying no. But what if I painted this picture? You're at home, and a guy with an axe, a guy running in fear from a man who's holding an axe, shows up at your door. And he says, oh my God, I'm being chased. There's a man with an axe who wants to kill me. Please, please give me help, give me shelter. And so he said, okay, come, go to my basement and hide there until he goes away. Crazy man chasing. Then there's a knock on your door a few minutes later, and you open the door, and it's a man with an axe. And he says, have you seen some guy running like crazy? He looks like this. Now, the man is in your basement, right? What should you say? No. I've never seen anyone like that. Or you should say, yeah, I've seen him. He went over there. And then go pick up the phone and call the police. That's what you should do. So is it a good thing to lie? Well, you have to qualify that statement. You have to say, most of the time, no, but sometimes, yes. The point being, dharma is always context sensitive. There is no absolute morality in this world. In this world, in matters of this world, you always have to ask, what's the situation, what's the circumstance, what's the time, who's involved, what's the background, all of that has to be taken into account in order to come to a proper decision of what needs to be done. The reason this is important for us in talking about the Ramayana is part of context sensitivity means realizing that dharmas in this world will always conflict. They will always conflict. That's the second thing to keep in mind about karma. The first is that it's context sensitive, and the second is that they will always conflict with each other. Two dharmas will always become at loggerheads with each other throughout your life, because there are always competing duties in this world. So, my son is not feeling well at all, and he needs to go to the doctor. But my boss wants me to come to work for an emergency meeting. I've got a dharma to my employer, who's paying my salary, and I've got a dharma to my son, who needs to go to the doctor. And whatever the circumstance, I need to take it, right? There's these two choices. Two dharmas conflicting with each other. Both are valid dharmas. Which one should I choose? Most people would say, well, take your son to the doctor. Your boss will understand. Family is more important. So we make a choice. But in other situations in life, that choice is not half as easy as it was there. You can be in a situation where there is no good solution. Look at Arjuna's case in Bhagavad Gita. What were his options? Stay and fight and kill your relatives and your loved ones. And the other option was run away and have these tyrants rule the kingdom and make the citizens suffer and allow your relatives to suffer and die, right? So two options. Allow the people and your relatives to suffer, or allow the people and your relatives to suffer. Those were his two options on the table. On a material level, right? Spiritually we know there was another solution Krishna had in mind. But on a material, on a moral level, on the level of dharma, there is no good solution to Arjuna's problem. He's got two conflicting dharmas that he doesn't know. He says, Garbhanya dosho pahata swabhava, prichami dvam dharma samudhacheta. Tell me what is my dharma, because samudhacheta, I'm completely confused. I don't know what to do. So tell me what is my dharma. That's Arjuna's problem. And I'm sure we have experienced in life the same thing of being torn in opposite directions and not knowing which dharma to follow, because you can only do one. If you haven't experienced this circumstance, it's just because you haven't lived long enough. At some point in life, this is going to happen. It will happen again and again and again, because that is the nature of dharma in this world. When you choose one dharma over the other, one dharma is satisfied and the other dharma suffers. The other dharma suffers. You fail in the other dharma. In the case of Lord Ramachandra, he had several dharmas he was fulfilling. His dharma as a son, his dharma as a husband, his dharma as a brother, his dharma as a king. And for 99% of his life, he was able to fulfill all of these dharmas together perfectly. That's a far better record than any human being can try to achieve. For us, if we get 60%, we're doing pretty well. He made the right choice, and he fulfilled all of his dharmas at the same time. That's the point. But there are a couple instances in his life where the dharmas he was performing, all of them could not be fulfilled at the same time, and a choice had to be made. And when that choice had to be made, the dharma that he chose was the dharma of king over all others, including the dharma of husband and the dharma of brother. What people don't realize is, besides banishing Mother Sita, Lord Ram also ends up banishing Lakshman at the end of the Ramayana. For similar concerns, not criticisms from the public, but also duties as a king that he had to fulfill. The point being that if you are king, if you are ruling, your dharma as a king supersedes all other dharmas. It trumps all other dharmas. Because in this world, there is always a hierarchy of dharmas. And one dharma will supersede the other, But the dharma as king supersedes the rest. When someone is a king, they are a public servant. Their lives, their bodies, their happiness all belongs to the citizens of the country. The king has no right to claim anything as his own. In fact, the Bhagavatam describes how at the end, after he became coronated as king, the first thing that Lord Ramachandra did was do a huge fire sacrifice, yajna, in which he donated everything he had and the kingdom to all the brahmanas and all the citizens of the country. He just gave it away. And it says he had nothing left but the clothes on his body, and Mother Sita had nothing left but the clothes on her body plus her nose ring. Somehow she kept the nose ring. And that's it. And all the people, the citizens, were so moved by his gesture that they gave everything back and they said, look, we can't manage all this. You are the king. You need to run this for us. Please. You're the person who should. Because you have no attachment to it, you're actually the right person to keep it all. And they give it back. But the point being, the king, by being given that position of wealth and power and enjoyment, we see the role of king and we think, wow, what a pleasure. What nice, what good karma it would be to be a king. You have all the power at your disposal. You have all the sense pleasure at your disposal. Everyone's at your command. It would be so great. But it comes with a very, very high cost. And that cost is that you have lose all rights to claim your own pleasure. And when he banishes Mother Sita, he says this. He says this to his brothers. He says this to Lakshman. That I am giving up every thread and every shred of happiness I have in my life. I'm banishing away the source of all my joy and happiness today by sending Mother Sita away. And again, Lakshman returns from leaving Mother Sita into the forest and then tries to enliven the Lord again and tries to give him some motivation to again rule the kingdom. So he knows very well what the price is, what the cost is. And when the Agni Pariksha takes place, it's not that the Lord does not realize that from the perspective of a husband, he's doing something wrong. In fact, everyone tells him so. Everyone tells him. When he tells Sita Devi, he says, go away from here. I don't need you anymore. There's a hue and cry from all the monkeys and all the bears. They have fought. They've risked their lives to get her back. And now, goodbye? They're really upset. Lakshman, for the first time in his life, is upset with Lord Ramachandra. Vibhishan can't stand it. At that point, Lord Brahma shows up in the sky. And he tells Lord Ramachandra, what are you doing? Don't you know Sita is pure? Why are you behaving like this? King Dashrath comes and he tells off Lord Ramachandra. He's already left this world, so he's coming down from heaven to see his son. He tells off Lord Ram and he asks Sita to forgive him. He says, please, please don't keep this in your heart, my daughter-in-law. Essentially asking forgiveness. Everyone, Agnidev, she enters the fire, and Agnidev returns. We talked about this yesterday with actual Mother Sita. And he tells off Lord Ramachandra. He says, what are you doing? Why are you behaving like a common man? When you know your wife is so wonderful. Everyone knows, and Lord Ramachandra knows, that from the perspective of the dharma of a husband, this is not good. He knows that. But he can't follow the dharma of a husband. And that's what he says. He says to everyone. He says, I know that Sita is completely pure. I have no doubt. And I know that she should not deserve to go through this. This is not right. But I have have no choice in the matter because of the example I have to set for the kingdom, because of what the public will say. In fact, at the end of the Ramayana, when Sita finally comes back, only to leave again, but when she comes back, in the care of Valmiki Muni, Lord Ramachandra finally asks forgiveness. And he tells Valmiki Muni, "I am so, so sorry. Please forgive me that I did not accept Sita Devi the way I should have. I have no doubt. I have never had a doubt about her purity and about her qualities and about the fact that she did not deserve any of this. My point is that when people point out that Lord Ramachandra was not behaving like a husband should, they're right. And yet, when they say that Lord Ramachandra did something wrong, they're wrong. Because there are circumstances in life when one dharma supersedes another, when we have to sacrifice something to do something more important. And God willing, we will never find ourselves in this difficult a circumstance. Just like Krishna willing, we will never have to face what Arjuna had to face in terms of his decision about karma. Our choices are much easier. We have a difficult year with our family because one of our family members is in ill health, suppose. So we've been cutting corners at work. And so your boss calls you in at the end of the year for your review and says, "You know, your performance this year was subpar." And what do we say? We say, "No, it was excellent." "What do you mean? It was terrific." But maybe it was. Maybe he's misjudging us. But most of the time, what we'll say is, "Yeah, I know. I'm so sorry. It's been a difficult year. And I might even have to take family leave." In other words, it's not a question that you didn't hit the target when it came to your dharma as an employee. But you're not regretful for it in the sense that you realize that you had a higher dharma that you had to take care of. In our eyes, the dharma of family is the highest because that is our life. None of us are kings. But for one who is king, that dharma supersedes all others because the king is asked to treat all of the public, all the citizens, as his own children. The word raja is the same word for child and the same word for citizen in Sanskrit. It's the same word. Raja is the children of the king. The king has to look after them and take the entire citizenship as his family, even if it means sacrificing those who are immediately part of his family and sacrificing his own happiness, which Lord Ramachandra certainly did. So, hopefully that principle is clear, okay? That given two dharmas, that dharmas are context sensitive, they always conflict, and when they conflict, one dharma has to be chosen over another. That means that the dharma that is not chosen will suffer. In this case, the king's dharma has to be chosen over family dharma. Therefore, the family dharma did suffer, and the Ramayana points this out clearly. Right? And Lord Ramachandra himself sees it clearly, and yet he did not do the wrong thing because he chose a dharma when he had no other choice.